Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. I am Seth Merrow. This is Racing Across America on a Saturday morning, which offers a fabulous stakes action around the horn across the country, and we will be talking about it this morning at Belmont. We have a great lineup, and a little bit later on we'll be joined by David Aragona, of course the morning line odds maker at the New York Racing Association, also with Time Form. They've got a great card down at Churchill. You heard Brian Natto just go over that in the handicappers report. Knicks Go, the Lucas Classic, the ACAC Boleum, just a fabulous day of racing there as well. And they kicked things off, the fall meet at Santa Anita yesterday. And they have great stakes action today. Medina Spirit in the awesome again. So we'll hit on that in just a moment with our friend John White. First, I do want to alert you to the promos coming up today. There's a Pick 3 bankroll online. I'll be playing a pick three on behalf of the bankroll team. I think you still have time to put your name in the hat to see if you can get on the bankroll team. Go to capitalotb.com for more information about the pick three bankroll. Today, there's a live players bankroll at the Clubhouse Racebook. Come on down. The team members put in a little money. Capital OTB puts in a little money. Then the team members get a race to play during the day. If they make money, that goes into the pool for everybody to split up at the end if you're on the team, and it should be a lot of fun. We've done it before and always brings some entertainment and some cash potential. That's today here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, as noted, we're going to talk some Santa Anita at the top of the show, and then, as I say, David Aragona with New York Racing a little bit later on. But yesterday we caught up with our friend John White out at Santa Anita, morning line odds maker out there. Always a good conversation with John. Checked in with him yesterday, obviously, because with the time difference, it's easier to get him a little bit later. So we recorded this yesterday. But with a great lineup for the first Saturday, the opening Saturday, things kicked off yesterday at Santa Anita. Oh, and by the way, Santa Anita, we have Thoroughbred Racing available tonight here on the network and via Capital OTB Bet, so you'll be able to play that entire Santa Anita card today. And we hit on all the stakes action with John White coming up next. So here he is, John White, and the opening Saturday stakes card at Santa Anita. Opening day at Santa Anita was Friday, big stakes weekend coming up, and I thought who better to reach out to than our friend John White from Santa Anita, get a little Santa Anita stakes action preview talk on this morning's show. John, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
And I will ask you, opening day at Santa Anita, I'm curious, opening day at Saratoga is big up here, and understandably. I mean, we're a little parochial up here, upstate, and it's our major league sport, certainly, and we only get that, you know, 7.5 weeks a year, so it's a big deal. But I'm guessing there's a little bit of buzz and some excitement in the air when the opening day of the two meets at Santa Anita kick in?
Well, there is, no question about it, especially with the Breeders' Cup this year in Southern California at Del Mar. So that adds a little bit of extra spice to the opening week at Santa Anita, quite frankly. Really, the two biggest opening days on the Southern California calendar, though, are opening day for Santa Anita of the winter-spring meet, because that's always a big deal the day after Christmas. And then really the biggest opening day on our calendar, on our circuit, you might say, is Del Mar Summer Meet. I mean, that's always been a huge deal. It's been diminished a little bit because of COVID-19, but so it hasn't been quite as wild as it was prior to the pandemic. But those are the real two big opening days. But again, because of the Breeders' Cup in Southern California this year, certainly there's excitement in the air with the opening this week of racing returning to Santa Anita Park.
Yeah, looking forward to, again, a nice stakes weekend at Santa Anita. And, you know, knock wood, hopefully we've been saying it for months now, but sooner rather than later, things are back to normal, and that opening day at Del Mar comes back to normal and the opening day for the winter meet. I'm looking forward to the winter meet. I will say, you have one race coming up at the end of the year this year that I am really looking forward to, the Malibu, and it came out this week that no Breeders' Cup for Flightline, but they're looking at the Malibu for that one, and I think that with the three-year-old division and the three-year-old sprint division this year, I think the Malibu stands a chance of being just kind of a Grand Slam type of a race.
You're absolutely right, Seth. I mean, already with Flightline being targeted for that race, and remember, this year we had Charlatan win the race, and it was a showdown with Nashville, so that was really exciting. So we could really have fireworks again in that Malibu, because Flightline has been absolutely sensational. It has two starts so far, and you know, I've got to hand it to John Sadler. I've known him for three decades, and he's such a good trainer, always has been. You know, Seth, I kind of chuckle. There once was a time when John Sadler was kind of regarded as this sprint trainer, because he'd had a lot of good sprinters on this circuit, and he's shown that he's a lot more than just a sprint trainer. But this is kind of going back to his roots in a way, of what he excelled with early in his training career with sprinters, Flightline, and he's been very prudent in how he's handling Flightline with these huge buyer state figures. You know, so oftentimes when we see these exceptionally fast thoroughbreds, they don't last. And so John Sadler's trying to do his best to not ask too much too soon of Flightline. I mean, it's got to be tempting to look at a race like the Breeders' Cup Sprint when you've got that kind of ammunition of a Flightline. But so I really hand it to John Sadler. You know, he had just a freakishly fast filly by the name of Malaire back in the 1980s. And she was a California bred. And her race, when she won at Hollywood Park, I called that chart for the Daily Racing Forum. And she absolutely annihilated Eclipse Award winner and Preakness winner Snow Chief that day. So, and I was driving out of Hollywood Park that day, as a matter of fact, and as I got to leaving the stable gate area, John Sadler pulled up right next to me, and he rolled down his window. I rolled down my window, and I said, John, that was sensational. As Malaire that day won a one-mile race at the 132 and change. So that's how... You know, how many times are you going to see a filly or mare run a mile that fast? So, but that was the last race of her career. So that's getting back to what I say. John Sadler trying to look at the big picture with Flightline.
Yeah, you're right. It's got to be tempting. And for folks, I've talked about the horse a bunch of times on the show, and we've had some of the folks from West Point on the show, so we've had a chance to talk since the career has put up those gaudy buyer numbers. The 114 buyer certainly jumps off, and again, it's got to be tempting, but it looks like they're being prudent, and the Malibu now in the sight. So as I say, that's something to look forward to a few months down the line. And speaking of,
by the way, Seth, you mentioned the 114 and called it a gaudy figure, which is true. But something I think fans need to keep in mind when looking at buyer speed figures, I've written about this extensively in my weekly ExpressBet.com column, and that is buyer figures do not take into account certain things like your wide trip or, like in the case of Flightline, just how easily he won that race. I've always advocated that I think it would be better for the buyer paper if they were able to put it like an asterisk or a plus in an exceptional performance like that. In other words, it was nothing more than a workout. So his 114 against a horse that is asked, you know, for their best to get a 114, that's apples and oranges, really. So, yes, the figure is a 114, but, again, the buyer people do not take into extent, like if you're just under wraps, a win with, a ton of speed and reserve. So that's something that I think, you know, we have so much information today, Seth, at our fingertips. So that's something that a bettor can be very smart about and look at and make a mental note of that or make an actual note of it in situations like that, to where I think Flightline not only got the 114, but he deserves extra credit for how he accomplished the 114.
I like that idea. Put a plus in. I think that's a kind of an interesting idea. And for folks who aren't familiar with speed figures or maybe just familiar with the buyers, other speed figures, as you say, do take into account other factors like distance traveled, which is an important factor. And so I kind of like the concept of a plus for a performance that maybe exceeds the number that they have to give the horse. But yeah, interesting idea. And speaking of gaudy numbers and speaking of your online column, pulled up your recent online column and you commented on the Pennsylvania Derby performance. And I'd like to have you talk a little bit more about it because I have heard other people say the same thing over the past week. Coming out of the Pennsylvania Derby, Hot Rod Charlie, a 111 buyer figure, and people have said just what you said, that 111 in the performance at Parks last week makes Hot Rod Charlie an interesting character, an interesting player heading into the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Well, and that 111 certainly stacks up well when you look at the last three editions of the Breeders' Cup Classic, because Authentic got a 111 when he won the Classic last year, Vino Rosso a 111 when he won the Classic 2 years ago, and Accelerate got a 105 when he won the Breeders' Cup Classic 3 years ago. So that really puts that 111 into some perspective for Hot Rod Charlie. And don't forget, he ran such a sensational race in the Belmont Stakes. Yes, he lost that race, but he ran just a historic pace in the Belmont that day, going as fast as he did early. And it really was to his credit that he held on to finish second behind the Wind Machine and Champion Essential Quality. And those two will go at it again in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So they are two certainly just outstanding three-year-old colts that we have this year, Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality.
Yeah, and I will ask you, because you mentioned in the column, and I've talked about it last Sunday morning on the show, I had Steve Bick on. He was at Parks, and so we talked a little bit about the look at the race afterwards by the stewards and the no call, the no non-DQ. I said, and it seems like we're in the same ballpark reading what you had to say in the column about the look by the stewards, and you've been a steward yourself, so you have a great opinion on it. You said it was a close call for you. You would have gone the way the stewards did and made no call there, no change. Steve Bick was in the same camp. He said it was close for him, but he would have had no change. And here the guys have pulled it up. And we'll see Hot Rod Charlie goes out about four paths and moves Midnight Bourbon out. My take, it was very close for me. I think I would have changed the order of finish. And my take was, and I saw the night of the race, I went out to eat, ran into Jack Knowlton from Funny Side fame, Saratoga, and I was asking him about the race. And he was of the no-call opinion. And he said, well, the horse had the whole stretch to go by. But as I said to Bick last Sunday, moving the horse out like that stopped Midnight Bourbon's momentum a little bit, and maybe that would have changed the dynamic of the race. Because we all know if Midnight Bourbon goes up and maybe looks Hot Rod Charlie in the eye or puts a head in front, maybe that discourages the front runner. But as it turned out, Hot Rod Charlie spurts a length away and maybe discourages Midnight Bourbon. So I thought it stood a chance of changing the dynamic a little bit. So for me, it was very close. I probably would have changed. But as I say, it seems like I think I'm in the minority from folks I've talked to. I think most are like you. It was a close call, but the stewards got it right.
Well, to begin with, when I've been a steward, which goes back to the first year I was in 1979 at the age of 24, one of the youngest stewards in the history of the United States, I went into that position with this philosophy, and I've never wavered from it. And that is, if at all possible, I think it is best to leave the result stand rather than change it, because it's better if the race can be decided on the track rather than in the steward stand. Now, that said, I've voted for many, many, many disqualifications in all these years, going clear back to 1979, when actually I was involved in a double disqualification in which both people that we disqualified appealed and lost their appeals on that. But I think in this particular case, Seth, if Midnight Bourbon had made a run in the stretch and maybe lost in a photo, that would have weighed heavily on the stewards. It would have certainly weighed more heavily on me to where I would have then thought that perhaps that incident affected the outcome of the race. But the fact that Hot Rod Charlie won by a clear margin like he did, I think that's an important element of this. On the other hand, Seth, and this is why I say you can make a case either way on this, truthfully, I think it was a close call that could have gone either way. Let's say hypothetically that Midnight Bourbon happens to catch one of those hind legs of Hot Rod Charlie turning into the stretch. He would have had a situation similar to the Haskell in which he would have perhaps clipped heels and perhaps unseated the rider. So you're going to tell me that Hot Rod Charlie would then not have been disqualified? So in other words, the way you're looking at this then, the only reason, or maybe the principal reason, you're not disqualifying Hot Rod Charlie is just because he didn't drop the rider of Midnight Bourbon like what happened in the Haskell. So that's why I say you can kind of, you really can go back and forth on this. But when you're going to be able to go back and forth, to me, ultimately, it's probably in the best interest of racing that you let the results stand.
Yeah, you know, I can't disagree with it. I kind of like that idea because when you started out and said my philosophy to begin with was try to keep it the way it is, and maybe you're right. Maybe if it's a close call and you're kind of going back and forth, maybe the decision then is, well, let's just, well, you know, kind of make it a wash and stay the way it is. As I say, I didn't have a big argument one way or the other. And again, it's now going to be interesting to see what Hot Rod Charlie does in a three-year-old class that I think as the year has progressed is turning out to be very salty, not just on the side of Midnight Bourbon and Essential Quality, but also with horses like Life Is Good and certainly Jackie's Warrior. And it's going to play out to be a lot of fun as the year progresses as well. Let's jump into the stakes action at Santa Anita, though, on the opening weekend here for this meet. And we'll kind of work our ways backwards through the stakes action. Race number 11 on Saturday afternoon, the John Henry Turf Championship, a mile and a quarter. Masterpiece comes in off a good closing second place finish in the Del Mar Handicap last time. Acclimate was a close-up third in that race. But I went back and I pulled up a replay from this race last year. We're going to look at number three, United Get It Done under Flavien Prat. And again, this is last year's John Henry. And I thought United was coming in maybe a similar fashion. A 98 buyer in the Del Mar Handicap last year and comes in with a 97 buyer in the Del Mar Handicap this year, does United. So again, I thought there was maybe a similar pattern to that one coming in. Flavien Prat will be on board again on Saturday. So I'm tilting a little bit towards United, but what are your thoughts on the John Henry?
Well, I think United, the 5-2 morning line favorite, which I think he deserves favoritism in this race off his overall resume. Not only that, Seth, he had a nightmare trip last time in that Del Mar Handicap that you were referencing. He really was probably best that day, should have won that race. But, we see this so often in turf racing. You can get a bad trip, and he was bottled up for much of that race. And as you have mentioned, he won this race last year. Don't forget, going back earlier in his career, he darn near won the Breeders' Cup Turf of 2019 at Santa Anita, 51-1 on the board, and came within a whisker of defeating the horse of the year that year, Bricks and Mortar. He got beat ahead in that race at such a huge price. He's very consistent. He's very honest. You know, there was a thought he might be retired earlier this year when he ran a clunker in a four-horse field. He finished last in the Grade 2 Charles Whittingham at Santa Anita. But it was discovered thereafter that he'd had a foot problem in that race. And one of the greatest trainers I've ever had the privilege to get to know and watch his work, that is Hall of Famer Richard Mandela. And he got United back on the beam to win the Eddie Reed at Del Mar. Then most likely, as I say, if not for ill racing luck, he would be coming into this race off back-to-back Grade 2 wins.
Yeah, he, as I say, with the situation coming into this race last year. I like those year-to-year kind of, you can go back and look. I think on the stakes side, that's something you can look at as trainers maybe follow similar patterns. So I kind of like that. The Awesome, again, a race earlier, Grade 1 event, $300,000 up for grabs, 9 furlongs the trip. obviously all eyes will be on Medina Spirit. And it was during the Saratoga meet, so I wanted folks to go back and take a look at the shared belief, because a lot of our viewers, I'm sure, are focused quite a bit on Saratoga. The shared belief was at Del Mar on August 29th. Number two, Medina Spirit, gets it done in here. This was the first race back since the third place finish in the Preakness back in May, so it was a good return to action for Medina Spirit. Tripoli with a series of triple-digit buyers, maybe the horse to beat on Saturday. Tis a Magician off a triple-digit buyer, second place finish behind Tripoli in the Pack Classic last time is interesting. And the 101 in the allowance event back in June for Midcourt makes that one maybe an interesting long shot. But what are your thoughts on the Awesome again?
Well, I made Medina Spirit the morning line favorite. You know, he did finish first in the Kentucky Derby, which is, you know, a race of such magnitude. And one thing I've got to say about Medina Spirit, you know, he's got a lot of heart, Seth. There's no question about it. He showed that in the Robert B. Lewis back in January. It looked like he was, you know, he set the pace that day, and at the top of the stretch, it looked like he was toast, and he kept fighting and fighting and fighting, and he eked out a neck victory in that race. A Roman Centurion finished second, and a nose behind Roman Centurion was none other than Hot Rod Charlie. So Medina Spirit, I mean, he showed a lot of heart that day in the Kentucky Derby. He maintained that lead just valiantly all the way down the lane. Against the likes of Mandaloon, Hot Rod Charlie again, and a Central Quality, who had a very wide trip that day and I think was the best horse in the Kentucky Derby, quite frankly. And then in the Shared Belief, coming off a bit of a layoff, Medina Spirit, to me, again, he looked like he was in deep water turning for home, and yet then he just puts his head down and runs hard to that wire, and he got the job done as the favorite, and the runner-up in that race was no slouch. That's the Santa Anita Derby winner, Rock Your World, that a lot of people liked in this year's Kentucky Derby. So this will be his first start against older rivals, and so that's a question that he's got to answer. The pace situation is very favorable to Medina Spirit in this race, and that's another reason I made him the morning line favorite. He's got the name recognition. He's got the overall consistency. He's coming off a win. He shows, you know, a 111 and change workout at Del Mar since his last race, as well as a 59 and change drill at Santa Anita coming into this race. So he is most likely the horse to beat. But this is one of those cases where I make him the morning line favorite, but in the Santa Anita program and on the simulcast signal where they post my selections, I'm going to pick Tripoli, who is the now horse. And this horse has just really taken his game to such a higher level since he's been switched to the dirt, which is rather odd when you consider he's by grass champion Kitten's Joy. It's very understandable why they were racing this horse on the turf throughout the early portion of his career. But once they've switched into the dirt, I mean, he never got a buyer speed figure on the dirt higher than 80, you know, above the 80s. And then he goes to the dirt, and he's rattled off buyers of 100, 100, and 104. And I thought he was dangerous in the Pacific Classic, because if you watch closely in that San Diego handicap, he was parked out into the ocean on that occasion. And so even though he was 9-1 that day, I thought he ran the best race, losing by only a half a length to Express Train and defeating Royal Ships, who was third. So I like Tripoli in the race, but, you know, it's an interesting race. Tis a Magician. It has, again, a great trainer in Richard Mandela and a great rider in Flavian Pratt, and is coming off a big second in that Pacific Classic. Express Train will try to rebound off a clunker in the Pacific Classic, but he's run well at Santa Anita. He almost won the Santa Anita Handicap earlier this year, and we've got the Santa Anita Handicap winner in this race, but this is his first race since the Santa Anita Handicap back in March, and that's Idol. And so you got to figure maybe Idol's a little rusty coming into this race. Richard Baltus has said that, you know, this is a means toward an end. And so you figure maybe Idle's not going to be his absolute best off the layoff here, that he's a very talented horse and should never be taken lightly. So it's an interesting addition of the Awesome again, really, from top to bottom.
Yeah, I agree. There are four or five you can point at in here that on best efforts can certainly get it done. And I will say, just a fun side story, really, of a majority of Medina Spirit's career is John Velasquez on board, and he'll be back on board again on Saturday. And it's always a great guy, fun to root for Johnny V, as it were. And unusual to see him on a Bob Baffert horse as well.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Let's go one race earlier, the Rodeo Drive, Grade 1 event. $300,000 up for grabs for the ladies on the turf at a mile and a quarter. Dog Tag and Going to Vegas coming out of the maybe at Del Mar. They ran 1-2, and I have that replay here. Going to Vegas is going to be the number 8 horse. Number 3 is Dog Tag, so they're both interesting. Neige Blanche, 2 wins in the last 3 starts, including a stake at Del Mar last time. And Luck is kind of interesting. Came in from Europe and won at Del Mar. Now, it was an optional claimer, so there's a little bit of a step up here, but did run very well over in France to start the career for L&J Foxwoods. Makes the second U.S. start in this Grade 1 event. And being lately raced, that one's kind of intriguing to me as well. What were your thoughts in the Rodeo Drive?
Well, I made Going to Vegas the 5-2 morning line favorite because I think, you know, based on her back-to-back wins at probably the Grade 2 John C. Maybe that she won at 9-5, she's in sharp form coming into this race, and she's also got a sterling record on the turf at Santa Anita, 10 starts, and then the exact 7 of those 10 times with 4 victories. So I think she deserves favoritism in this race. But I made Luck. I don't think many morning line makers would have made Luck as low as I did, considering she's going from an allowance 40,000 claiming optional claimer into this Grade 1 event. But I know they're sky high on Luck over there at the Baltus Barn. Baltus also trains Going to Vegas. But you see Flavian Pratt. Now, see, it was fully, bumps off Luck to ride Going to Vegas. So there's another reason I made Going to Vegas a favorite. But I just was listening to the Steve Beck show a little while ago. Jade Fridman of the Daily Racing Forum was on there. And he said that Luck, he says, is 3-1. I don't think you'll even get the 3-1. So he's kind of knocking the pack. But I made Luck too high at 3-1. And I guarantee you, most people would have made that horse 4-5. And then Fridman says, well, I think your luck will buy for favoritism. Well, when I make Going to Vegas 5-3, I would say that's buying for favoritism.
Yeah.
Because that's odds right next to each other. So that shows you it's a tough business, that morning line business. You make somebody like that 3-1, and even then they're saying, oh, that's too high. So like I said, I will tell you this, Seth, I picked Luck on top because, again, I think, this is the, and I can kind of feel that she's what we call a wise guy horse. This is going to be one of these, you know, kind of steam horses that gets a lot of play. So that's one reason why. I mean, originally I was looking at 4-1 maybe, and I bit the. Now the trouble is when you make more line, if I make Luck that low, then I've got to make others higher.
Yeah,
and so I had to raise some of these, like the Magic Attitude, I was maybe going to make lower. I had to make 5. Red Lark, I was going to maybe make 8. I had to raise to 10. So there's an ebb and flow when you're making the line. But I felt that confident that this Luck was going to get a lot of play. And I think I feel vindicated in my decision to do that by Pridman's comment to Steve Bick this morning.
Yeah, I do not envy you morning line odds makers at all. But now for me, this adds intrigue to the afternoon. Now I'll be interested to see what Luck does go off at. I think you kind of nailed it right there. But I'm going to be interested to see now how it plays out in the Rodeo Drive. All right, one race earlier, the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. Field of 6 is scheduled, and it's a nice field. Dr. Scheivel coming off a couple of wins at the Del Mar meet, most recently in the Bing Crosby. Vertical Threat has the triple-digit buyer, but had to go to Mahoning Valley to get it, so I'm not totally convinced I'm buying into that one. Coming off an optional claiming win last time at Del Mar, Cult Fiction may be interesting. Flagstaff on the second to Frenzy Fire in the True North, two starts back, is intriguing. But I like CZ Rocket. I've liked CZ Rocket right along, and so I pulled up as a replay the Count Fleet. We're going back to April here, and at Oaklawn Park, CZ Rocket and Whitmore faced off down the stretch with CZ Rocket pulling away over the fan favorite Whitmore. So to me, CZ Rocket is really interesting in here. Has to get back to that form, but I think the last race at Del Mar, the second in the Pat O'Brien, says that that is possible. So I'm going to tilt in that direction. But what were your thoughts on the sprint?
Well, I think this is a race that, you know, you really can't just throw anybody out here, that's for sure. And so, I mean, even though it's only a field of six, it's a pretty salty six-pack in this race, that's for sure. And, you know, I think, you know, I had a very tough time in deciding who to make the morning line favorite in this race because I think it could go either way, Dr. Scheibel or CZ Rocket. Because CZ Rocket gets bet all the time. He's been the favorite in three straight. And, again, with his overall record, there's a reason he gets bet all the time. On the other hand, Dr. Scheibel, it's not like he doesn't get a lot of support at the windows. And when they met in the Bing Crosby, CZ Rocket was the 3-2 favorite, and Dr. Scheibel was off at 2-1 in that race. So they were relatively close. And I honestly, Seth, I think CZ Rocket ran the better race in that race because he dropped so far back that day, and then I thought he wasn't going to even, you know, be anywhere close, and he came rolling late and darn near won that race. And I'll tell you what, CZ Rocket came back and ran a heck of a race last time out too, because even though he lost, Ginobili, who was coming off a huge win earlier in the Del Mar meet, vindicated that performance and ran another huge race to win the Pat O'Brien. So I think that CZ Rocket just faced kind of a buzzsaw in that Pat O'Brien last time. So it's to me, and Dr. Scheibel didn't get any favors by trying the rail either, although, you know, he came from behind in the Bing Crosby. So, you know, if you're going to come from behind, but usually he's a little closer to that pace. And I take great pride in terms of who I make the favorite. You know, I feel that my batting average on that has been really good through the years. I've never had a Santa Anita meet where I've been lower than 70% in terms of having the right favorite. In other words, the horse I make the morning line favorite goes off as the favorite. At the Del Mar summer meeting, which that's a very tough meeting, Seth. It's not as tough as the Saratoga meet in terms of trying to determine favoritism. I think David Aragona does such a superlative job there in New York, because that's a tough circuit to be making the morning line. But Del Mar, I had the right favorite 73.3% of the time. And at the recent Santa Anita meet, the winter spring meet, I was at 75.5% of the time. So I pay very close attention as to whether I have the right favorite or not. Why is that important? Because when people are looking at the races ahead of time and trying to formulate their strategy, most horse players today are trying to beat the favorite. They're trying to do so for value. And so if they can look at Equibase or the racing form past performances or whatever past performances you use, and you see who is listed as the favorite and it's going to be right 70% of the time, that gives you an indication of who you want to try to beat. So that's one of the most important aspects of my job as the morning line anchor. So this is going to be a close call with favoritism that could go either way.
Yeah, it is a fun race, no question about it. And there's another stake on the card, the City of Hope Mile. Short field in there, and it looks like it's going to play off the Del Mar Mile. You have the 1-2-3 finishers in there, and Mo Forza, Smooth Lake Straight, and Hit the Road. But again, with the short field, and we're watching the finish here to Del Mar Mile, where, again, they ran 1-2-3. But I just want to change the subject because we got to wrap up, and I wanted to wrap up with you because it kind of hit my thought process as we were talking here. I'm wondering, you know, we were talking about the sprinters and whatnot, and did you get to see the race up at Saratoga, the four-go with Yaupon, unfortunately now retired, but Yaupon and Frenzy Fire, and Frenzy Fire trying to take a chomp out of Yautown. And I know you're a guy who appreciates the history of the game, and I can tell you at the track, everybody was saying, we've all seen the famous photos and whatnot of other situations like this, but nobody can remember one quite like the extended savagery of Frenzy Fire on Yaupon. It was really the buzz race of the meetup at Saratoga. Did you get a chance to see it? What were your thoughts?
I was watching it live, Seth, and look, I bought my first daily racing form in 1966. I still have that racing form, by the way, although it's yellowed and tattered. But that's how long I've been watching racing, and I've never, that's the weirdest, wildest thing I have ever seen. Well, look, I've seen a lot, not a lot, but I mean, I've seen a number of savage incidents through the years. I've seen it as a chart caller. I've seen it in my various capacities, broadcaster and racing official and so forth. But those are savage situations where the horse just reaches over one time and, you know, tries to bite the horse. This was just incredible. And, I mean, it took your breath. It was shocking, I mean, quite frankly. And I really give the rider credit for being able to stay on, you know. That's such a precarious balance in those saddles for those riders. And when your horse is reaching over and repeatedly trying to bite the horse to the inside, I mean, that's hard enough for the rider to stay in the saddle. And doggone it, if Frenzy Fire didn't almost win the race. I mean, that was just one for the ages, quite frankly, Seth. In many respects, that's really, when you think about it, the race of the year.
Yeah, I can tell you, being on track there live, it was the buzz of the day. Walking out of the track that night, everybody was talking about it. I've talked about it since. It was a great day of racing all around, but that kind of stood out and gave everybody kind of a story to tell on their racing scene. John, as always, appreciate the visit. Great conversation, always a lot of fun. And I wanted to get some thoughts on the opening of the fall meet here at Santa Anita. Great stakes action on Saturday. So good luck to you and everybody at Santa Anita on this meet. And, of course, we will talk again.
Thanks a lot, Seth.
Appreciate it. John White from Santa Anita.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America again on a very fun Saturday morning leading into a Saturday afternoon of stakes across the country. And I appreciate John White taking the time yesterday to meet with us and talk a little Santa Anita and their stakes action. Again, great stakes action as well down at Churchill. But also, Great stakes action in New York this afternoon. We'll be covering all of that. And I thought, who better to reach out to than David Aragona, the Morning Line odds maker, and with Time Form as well. David, good morning.
Good morning. Great day of racing. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a big day of racing, as they say, across the country, including New York. And I said to you off the air, John White gave you a little tip of the cap, the interview yesterday. He was talking about how tough the summer meet at Del Mar is, and he said you do a great job in New York. And I will ask you, because he said that, I thought summer meets probably are a little more challenging because Del Mar, and certainly up at Saratoga, it's such a launch pad for two-year-olds. And I'm imagining on the morning line situation, it becomes an extra. I said to John, I do not want your job. It's a tough job, but I think it probably the challenge moves up a little bit with the two-year-old first-time starters. It's got to be a lot tougher to come up with a morning line.
Well, that's high praise coming from John because he's one of the premier line makers in the country. But you're right. The summer meets are really tough because of those first-time starters. Sometimes the buzz is just out there and everybody hears it. Like on Jack Christopher, everybody knew he was a runner before he made his debut and he's going to be among the favorites in the Champagne today. But sometimes you got to do a little more digging to find out who the live first-time starters are going to be in those races.
Yeah, as I say, I wouldn't want the job, but particularly those two-year-old races because it's a little bit of a guessing game. And again, you do a great job. I think that is a consensus. Folks can find your selections on the NIRA website. Go to the racing drop-down menu, click on handicapping, and then click on time form. And I kind of, as I came up with replays for our discussions here, I was kind of riffing off your picks a little bit. And you've got a couple I'm interested to hear about, including in the Woodward. The Woodward today, of course, Maxfield comes back, Art Collector coming off a couple of wins, the Aladarp at Saratoga, the Charlestown Classic, Code of Honor. I'm going in the direction of Code of Honor coming off the Island last time with the 105 buyer. But I was looking at your selections, going to pull up a replay here and go back to Saratoga on July 21st. We're going to look at the number two, Forza D'Oro, getting it done in an optional claimer. Subsequently ran third in the Jockey Club up at Saratoga, but I see from your selections, you kind of like Forza D'Oro. Talk a little bit about your thoughts in the Woodward.
I mean, Maxfield is the horse to beat in this race. I just have thought for a while now Maxfield is just a little bit overrated. He's won a lot of his races against weaker competition. The two times this year he stepped up against Grade One Company, he's been a bit of a disappointment. They're adding blinkers today, which is kind of an odd move for a horse whose form is already established at this point. So I thought it was going to be a pretty short price. I wanted to look for some value in this race. And with Forza D'Oro, it's purely a value-based selection. I thought that he was not a sufficient value last time in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and it just seemed like he was too obvious. Everybody went for him that day as the new face in a race where they were kind of tired of the other handicap horses. And I didn't think he ran that badly, a mile and a quarter for the first time. He was in an unfamiliar position setting the pace that day. And he just didn't quite get the distance and faded at the end. But now he's getting back to Belmont Park where he's run some of his best races. He's drawn on the outside this time. So he should be able to get that outside stalking trip that I think he prefers. And the turn back to 9 furlongs, I think, is going to work for this horse. And he figures to be a much better price today than he was when he was even money in the Jockey Club Gold Cup last time. So I'm going to go in his direction. He's got to improve a little bit, but I think he can.
Yeah, again, off of that big allowance performance that we saw, the optional claimer performance that we just watched, he went off as the favorite in the Jockey Club, wound up third there. So it will be interesting to see where the betting public goes, but I think there are the options, Maxfield, Art Collector, Code of Honor. And as I say, I like Code of Honor coming off of the Island last time. It was a start off a layoff, January to August, had previously run in the Pegasus World Cup, but the race in the Island with the 105 buyer, I thought that was intriguing, and he's raced well at Belmont before. I'm going to tilt to him as an alternative to Maxfield, because I think I'm with you on Maxfield.
Yeah, Code of Honor, I can't get out of my memory when he looked so good coming off the layoff in the Westchester last year, and it looked like he was going to be one of the top handicap horses in the country. And then after that, he kind of just disappointed time after time, and I wonder if maybe he was just fresh off the layoff again in the Island, and we're going to see kind of the same act with him in this race. But he definitely does have the back races from his three-year-old season. It would make him pretty tough in here. I just wonder if he's going to get back to them.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a field of six, and I think it's a fun field of six. It's going to be an interesting edition of the Woodward now down at Belmont, after having been at Saratoga for many years. But we had the flip-flop this year, the Jockey Club and the Woodward, which I think was a great move, because I think the distance and the way trainers now train up to the Breeders' Cup, I think it plays out well for both races. And I think that's demonstrated by the nice field this afternoon in the Woodward. Let's go one race earlier, and we will go to the Belmont Turf Sprint Invitational. And here is where I'm very interested to see your thoughts on your top pick. I went with Therapist, but I'm dicey on the cutback on the turf. Doesn't normally work quite as well, but I just thought this horse seems to be in good form, so I'm tilting in that direction. But again, going over to the NIRA website and looking at your selections, you're tilting towards By Land and Sea. You made him 10-1 on the morning line. I have to think that's going to be legit, because the horse hasn't been seen since last October. So for the replay, I'm pulling up a workout replay. We're going to look at the horse working out on September 26th on the turf course at Belmont. And you can see here, it is a workout. This is a horse coming back from a layoff of just under a year. Going to be interested to hear your thoughts in the Belmont Turf Sprint.
I'm glad you pulled up that workout, because I actually watched it. It was one of the reasons I like this horse. I just love the way he was striding freely through the stretch. This is a horse that has a lot of early speed. They don't always use it in his prior races. He's turf sprinted before and has come from off the pace, but he's come from off the pace in some very fast-paced situations, like in that Mahoney last year when he was a three-year-old. Jack and Noah, who won that race, was an exceptionally fast horse for Mark Cassidy and just ran the field off their feet. There are no Jack and Noahs in this race. There's really actually no speed at all. And I just saw this morning that the number one Eddie Bianchi was scratched. The number 8 Belgrano was scratched. So that takes even more speed out of the race. And it just feels like a completely paceless situation. And By Land and Sea is a horse that does have enough tactical speed to be close to the pace. And I know the layoff is a concern, but I like this trainer switch to Tony Dutrow, who has had this amazing resurgence this year after having about 3 or 4 really quiet years prior to this. He has a pretty small stable even right now, but he's winning at a high percentage, especially in turf races. His horses just show up. And if they don't win, they seem to always hit the board. He's got a positive ROI on the year. I just really like this horse getting into Tony Dutrow's barn, and I think he still has upside in a race where we've just seen the best of basically everybody else, and I don't project a huge move forward from anybody else in this field.
Yeah, he's interesting, and now that you've kind of landed on him, I'll play around with him a little bit, I think, because the more I look, you know, the workout just before the one we saw on the turf, he had a workout on the main track, and it was a bullet workout, so the horse is in good form. And as you kind of alluded to, and I said when I handicapped this on the handicapping show earlier, there's no real world beaters in here. I landed kind of on Therapist by default, so it isn't a strong field of what I think is a specialty in the game, turf sprinting. So it is a race where I think you can play around a little bit. By Land and Sea, interesting in there. All right, let's go to the Champagne. One race earlier, the 8th race this afternoon, Grade 1 event, $500,000 up for grabs, and they will go a mile. Now, these next two races, you and I were kind of landing in the same direction. I like My Prankster in here. We're going to look at the maiden special went up at Saratoga. My Prankster is going to be the number 2 horse. I think you can point at about 4 in here and have a similar level of confidence. I put Gunite Run on right underneath. I just couldn't ignore the nice win in the Hopeful last time. But Wit, Jack Christopher, again, I think you can have an equal level of confidence all around with those 4 at least. What are your thoughts on the Champagne?
Yeah, for me, it was kind of a coin flip between those 2 impressive debut winners at Saratoga, Jack Christopher and My Prankster, as you alluded to. I gave the nod to My Prankster. I just think he's going to be a slightly better price in this race. And unlike Jack Christopher, who just won his debut with raw speed and did it pretty easily, I liked the way that My Prankster really responded to pressure through the stretch and rated off another horse in the early going. Just seemed like he showed a lot of professionalism in that race. And I think he's not going to have a lot of trouble handling the stretch out to a mile here, where with Jack Christopher, I wonder a little bit if he's ultimately going to be more of a sprinter, like a more of a Jackie's Warrior type, but maybe they can get the one turn mile in this race. I'm not too concerned about it because they just seem to have so much ability. I took kind of a negative stance on the horses coming out of the Hopeful. With Wit, he did have a legitimate stumble at the start, but it's not the first time he's had trouble at the start of that race, and of his races, I should say. And he just didn't finish off that race the way that I really wanted to see for the stretch out and distance here. I think he's been a little overrated the entire time since since his impressive career debut. So I was kind of against him. And with Gunite, I mean, he has been improving in every start. So I guess it's reasonable to say maybe he'll take another step forward here as a son of Gunrunner. But I thought he had a lot go his way last time. That was, in my opinion, a pretty speed favoring track on closing day at Saratoga. And he kind of rode that minor bias a little bit. So I was somewhat against the hopeful horses and wanted those two coming out of maiden races. And I also wouldn't discount Todd Plitcher's horse all the way on the outside, the number six Command Performance at a price. I didn't put him on top, but this horse ran really well to be second in his debut and seems like one out of all of these that's really going to relish the extra distance.
Yeah, just they're stepping up as still a maiden to this grade one company in the second start of the career from potent connections like that says a little something. All right, let's go a little bit earlier on the card and take a look also at the Miss Grillo. They're on the turf here for the two-year-old fillies. And again, I think we have a consensus here. I like McCulloch on top. We're going to watch the maiden special weight, maiden breaker, Saratoga back on August 8th. McCulloch will be the 1A. But again, it's a fun field. Philly Eagles coming into the Mark Cassie barn out of the debut win over in Europe adds a lot of intrigue. Kinchin had a little trouble and winds up a near miss for Chad Brown, a sentimental horse with the named after Jonathan Kinchin's father. By Bob Edwards and E5 Racing. Chad Brown, of course, again, training. So I think it's another fun race. Again, I tilted towards McCulloch. Your thoughts in the Miss Grillo?
Yeah, I thought this one looked pretty logical, as you were alluding to. McCulloch was really good first time out in her debut at Saratoga. She was bet down to 4-5 that day. I know she was part of an entry, but she was the one that was really hyped coming into that race. And she delivered. The pace was fast, so she got a good trip in that sense. But I thought she moved into contention pretty easily around the far turn and just took that race over with so much authority. And as a daughter of Frankel, you'd imagine that she's going to improve with experience. So I like McCulloch in here. Not anything too clever. She's likely to be a very short price. Not that I'm against Hail 2 and Kinchin coming out of that same race in late August at Saratoga. I thought that Hail 2 ran pretty well to make the first move in there. Kinchin, like you said, had a little bit of trouble, but the pace of that race was really fast, so it helped those horses closing into it. Hail 2 in particular has a pedigree that says she's going to get better with more experience and added ground. So I feel like one of those three is going to win, but I did give the nod to McCulloch just based on how impressive she was in that debut.
Yeah, it was in the same ballpark. David, before I let you go, we were talking before we went on the air, and I will let you add your thoughts to the consensus that after last week, everybody I've talked to seems to think Hot Rod Charlie, including John White just a few minutes ago, Hot Rod Charlie is going to be a big player in the Breeders' Cup Classic off the 111 in the Pennsylvania Derby. We also talked a little Jackie's Warrior. Give us your impressions from the results last week.
Yeah, I didn't think it was some major revelation in the Pennsylvania Derby that Hot Rod Charlie is a leading contender for the Breeders' Cup Classic. I mean, going all the way back to the Belmont Stakes, I was in the camp that said he ran the better race than Essential Quality in there because he was in the teeth of that really fast pace in the Belmont. So he's been running, in my opinion, just as well as Essential Quality throughout all of these races through the summer and fall. The difference is that Essential Quality has just won a lot more than Hot Rod Charlie has. But I think from a pure performance standpoint, they're pretty much on even footing heading into the Breeders' Cup Classic, and I would imagine that Hot Rod Charlie is going to be a better price. He just has to get sorted out that greenness that he showed in the stretch of the Pennsylvania Derby. You don't like to see that with a horse that's as experienced as he is. I think that was the 11th start of his career, and he's still kind of swapping leads and flicking his ears back and forth in the stretch. That's not a sign of professionalism, but he's a very talented horse. And as for Jackie's Warrior, I mean, he's just a machine. He shows up every time. I know he was beating nothing last week, but he ran another really fast speed figure. And there's nobody else, especially among the older horses in that dirt sprint division, that is running speed figures in the same ballpark as Jackie's Warrior. So he just seems to have a huge advantage heading into the Breeders' Cup sprint.
Yeah, the proverbial paid workout for Jackie's Warrior just looked fabulous. That's a special horse. Before I let you go, I just wanted to touch on tomorrow again. We'll toss in a little morning line conversation because in a 9-horse field, I'm sure it's very seldom you wind up with a 3-5 favorite, but Echo Zulu tomorrow in the Frisette certainly looks, I think you nailed it, or shorter. This is one of those, and I've said for a long time now, I think the betting public considers the buyers very importantly as far as the final odds. And she just has such an edge buyer-wise on this field. I think the 3-5 is legitimate, and I'm looking forward to seeing her tomorrow in the Frisette.
Yeah, I mean, she seems like she's going to be a heavy favorite just based on, as you said, how fast that she's run in both her maiden win and the spin away. The only real question is the stretch out to a mile. I mean, you never really know if these two-year-olds are going to go on developing, especially the ones that show such precocity early in the summer. But, I mean, a one-turn mile at Belmont, it shouldn't be too big of a hurdle for her, considering the way that she won, going 7 furlongs in the spinaway. She's way the horse to beat. I mean, if I had to mention one other horse in there, I am interested in the Todd Pletcher second-time starter, Amo Ray, who's drawn down towards the inside. I really like the way that she closed in her debut. I know that she's a maiden coming into that race, but she'd be the one that I would look forward to really stepping forward with the added distance, though Echo Zulu is way the horse to beat.
Yeah, Frisette tomorrow, but a great stakes races today. David, we appreciate your conversation on the stakes action. Again, great job on the morning line day in and day out, and we'll talk again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. David Aragon, again, Naira Morning Line odds maker with Time Forum as well. You can find his work over on the Daily Racing Forum. Selections every day. Again, Naira's website, pull down that racing menu and click on handicapping and then the Time Forum analysis, and you can find his selections and some comments as well. So check that out. All right, I'm going to check with the control rooms. One more break? Yes? No?
No, you're good.
Okay, so I will wrap it up here. They're saying we're good to go, but I will give you a little info on the promos coming up today and tomorrow, the Pick 3 Bankroll. I think you probably still have a little bit of time if you go to the website to get your chance to get on the Pick 3 Bankroll team for today. Check out the website, capitalotb.com. Put your name in the hat. See if you can get on the Bankroll team tomorrow. Or excuse me, there's still a Bankroll today. Today there's the live $500 Players Bankroll here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Come on down and enjoy the racing action as your venue today here at the Racebook, and maybe play in the Players Bankroll. Put a little money in. Capital OTB adds a little money, and then each member of the Bankroll team gets a race to play during the afternoon on behalf of the team. All the proceeds are split up amongst the team at the end. It's a lot of fun. We've done a few of these before, and it's always a challenge to try to come up with some money for the team and walk away with a little dough at the end of the day. That's what it's all about. That all happens this afternoon here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany, the same location that tomorrow you can watch all the football action and enjoy all the racing action as you can every Sunday throughout the NFL season. Football Sundays here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, been a fun morning. Handicapper support, Brian Netto and I, and Brian took a look at Churchill. Subsequently, on this hour of Racing Across America, we added in some Santa Anita and some Belmont stakes conversation as well. Really great action with some notable names and some Breeders' Cup implications as well coming up this afternoon and this evening. Again, with the big card at Santa Anita, we have Thoroughbred Racing available tonight here on the network and via Capital OTB Bet as well. So start firing, and I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We can start firing then and continue right on through the evening out at Santa Anita. Should be a lot of fun and hopefully profitable as well. That's going to be the game plan. But I'm going to wrap it up for this Saturday morning edition of Racing Across America. We're again back tomorrow with more Racing Across America at 10 a.m. with recaps of some of this nice stakes action. Looking forward to that. But in the meantime, looking forward to a lot of great action this afternoon and this evening. As I say, I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.